Cornerstone of our faith. Jesus didn't stay in the grave. He left our sin there, conquered them, and rose again. As Pastor Dave and I sat around Pastor Matt's table in his office and talked about this morning what we were going to focus on, the idea that we thought of was that people need to know that this isn't just some story. It's not just something we talk about as if it's something that could have happened. It's the truth. And we know it's the truth because there were truthful eyewitnesses that saw it, talked about it, and wrote it down. It made me think of a friend of mine who, when I was thinking about eyewitness, he loves to tell stories. And he's a great storyteller. In fact, when he starts telling a story, people are drawn in. Like if he started talking over there, everybody would be like trying to hear his story because he's just such a good storyteller. And he usually starts with, last week I was, and then he gets into this story and he turns the mundane into this elaborate, awesome thing, and you're just like, wow, this guy's amazing. And I think most of what he says is based on reality, because he really seems to be reliving the events he talks about, but you just kind of know that there's some exaggeration going on. You just kind of know that, you kind of wonder where does reality end and his imagination start taking over. And so I guess that's part of the fun of it. It's just, he's a great storyteller and he's very entertaining. He's not trying to lie or dupe you or anything. He's just great at telling stories. I have another friend who's not an elaborate storyteller like that. I mean, he can tell what happened and he can talk about it and he's interesting. People love being around him as well, but for different reasons. He draws people out and he's just really interested in them. He's not really the center of attention, but he kind of is, if that makes sense at all. The funny thing is, the more I learn about my more quiet friend, the more I realize he probably leads a much more interesting and adventurous life than my storytelling friend, even though you wouldn't know it from how they talk. I knew him for years before I heard the story about him actually running into a bear and both of them turning around and running the other way. And, I would expect to hear that story from my storytelling friend about how he ran into a bear and they scared the bear off. But I would know that the bear was probably 100 meters away and he was just imagining the running into part, So I have these two friends and they both attract people and both are great people and they're fun to be around. There's nothing wrong with the character of either one. The storytelling guy is great at telling stories. People just know he's imagining extraordinary things into the ordinary. But imagine I got into trouble with the law and I needed a character witness. Which one of my friends would I choose to be my character witness? Probably, for me, the answer is obvious. My quiet friend, my storytelling friend would probably tell a great story about how great I was, but everybody'd be kind of wondering, well, is that real? But my understated friend would they would believe him. So these two guys illustrate something that I think is really important when we talk about eyewitness. Character, what you're like, really matters. Someone who's known for being trustworthy will make a much better witness than someone who's not. Think about it this way. Imagine that you are looking for a financial advisor. And you meet with one possible person, and he's telling you about all this money he can make you. And he's going on, and you're like, wow, this sounds great. So you ask him, how much money have you made in the last couple years? And he just goes silent. So then you meet with your other possibility, and she asks about your goals and says she could really help you meet them, and you ask the same question. And she looks at you kind of funny because people don't really ask that kind of question, which is kind of interesting to me. But you ask, you know, well, what about you? Have you made any money? And she looks at you funny, but then she pulls out her, you know, some paperwork and starts showing you, these are some of the goals I've made, here's how I've met them, here's how I've helped other people meet them. So which one would you choose? The one who has a better character witness based on what they are like, right? So here's the point. Jesus asked us to be eyewitnesses of the truth of his death, life, and resurrection. He asks us to share our experience of the Holy Spirit's power at work in our lives. So when we talk about being eyewitnesses, we're talking about more than just telling a story. Anybody can tell a story. God wants us to tell the story so that people are invited to know him. And that means our character really matters. What we're like all the time. I've been challenged with this as I've been praying for some people for a long time that I love and don't know Jesus. And I want to tell them the story. And the question keeps coming to me, what do they see about my life that makes them want what I have? This is where I need to start telling the story with my life, with my character. You see, I want to tell them about Jesus, and I want them to know and trust him because he really does make a difference. And I need to represent that in how I live. And nowadays, when people are so skeptical about matters of faith, our character matters more than ever. And it's not about being perfect. It's not about having life all together and, you know, always be smiling or whatever. It's about people are more interested in those of us who admit our failings, and not in a way that says, well, that's just how I am. I can't change that. But in a way that says, I'm really sorry that I hurt you that way. And with God's help, I'll do better. You see, the resurrection of Jesus is all-encompassing. It's not just something we talk about with our words. It's not a story we embellish. And it's not just having great character alone. It's our character, which is God at work in us and us working with him. But it's our character and our words. We need both. And the implications of this for Christians is very important. As Christians, we are eyewitnesses. We have met Jesus. We know the story of his life, resurrection, life, death, and resurrection. We have experienced and accepted the gift of forgiveness that he offers when we've chosen to believe it. So we are witnesses. The question is, are we truthful witnesses? Are we truthfully and faithfully striving to live as God asks us to, the way Jesus loved people, forgave people, and cared for people? See, as you celebrate Easter today, I want to encourage you to delight in the reality of the resurrection and pray that God would give you the wisdom and the courage to be a truthful witness who loves Jesus, or loves people, loves Jesus, and loves people the way Jesus did. He loved people by touching those that nobody would touch. He took time for those that people would avoid. And he engaged them in ways that invited them into something better. Let's be truthful and faithful witnesses who tell that story like those guys said, that story that we never get sick of telling, because it's so amazing. And let's be people who can be trusted, like my second friend who I would choose to be my character witness.
Up and join me up front here. I would like to chat with you a little bit. You've been very patient as we've been traveling along in this service this morning, and I have something I would like to share. All of you adult types are welcome to listen in if you wish. How are you doing, gang? Doing all right? So I have a question for this morning. I want just to think about. See if you can answer this question. What's the question?
Were you there?
Were you there? Were you there?
Where?
So when I grew up in the church that I attended in Edmonton, we often sang a song that's called, Were You There? Do any of you adults know that song? Some of you might remember that song. We've sang it quite a bit often. Were you there? Were you there when you nailed him to the cross? Were you there in that whole Easter story? And it's a great reminder, every year we go, question, was I there? Were you there?
No.
Was I there?
No.
I wasn't there either.
He's always there.
So I'm thinking of this thing called eyewitness. We've been talking about eyewitnesses. The whole point of being eyewitness was somebody was there. Somebody saw it. So as I was thinking about this thing called eyewitness, we know that people have taken the time to record, I was there. So, you know, for example, if you do some archaeological digs, you can find these things called pictographs on the sides of cave walls or on sides of rocks. Why do people do that? They draw it out because I want someone to remember that I was here. I was here is important. So I was thinking about an example. So let me ask you this question. Where were you December 29th, 1996?
I wasn't alive.
Really? How many of you were...
I was born in 2007.
Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't even existing.
Oh. Okay, let's ask some of the adults. Maybe how many of you were there December 29th, 1996? Does anybody remember what happened on that day? Shout it. Snowstorm. It was called the Storm of the Century. December 29, 1996 was called the Storm of the Century. You know what? I wasn't there either. I was alive, but I wasn't there. I was dealing with the flood of the century in a different province. But when I moved here to Chilliwack about 20 years ago, guess what? I heard about the storm of the century. I heard all kinds of fantastic stories about the storm of the century. And I had to believe the people. They told me stories of snow was 12 feet high. We burrowed from promontory down to church. Okay, maybe. Maybe your friend would have told the story. I don't know. You know, I did a little bit of research as I was thinking about today, so I actually went online, because you can Google everything, and I guess what? I found pictures of the storm of the century, I found stories of the storm of the century, and I guess what? I can find out that the storm of the century actually happened, even if none of you were there yet. And because you and I, we weren't there, does that mean the storm didn't happen?
No.
It doesn't mean that, does it? Just because I didn't see it, that doesn't mean that the storm doesn't happen. So, what if I told you that today, we're part of making history today? Would you believe me?
Yeah.
Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Every single second in the world is making more history.
Well, it's a little bit bigger than that. For example, what's the date today? What's today's date? What was it? April 1st. What's April 1st about? April Fool's Day. Did you know, apparently the last time Easter fell on April 1st was 1956.
I don't believe it.
I did some research on it and I wasn't there. Now, do you know the next time? I wasn't there, sorry. Some of you maybe were, but I wasn't there. Did you know that the next time we're going to celebrate Easter on April 1st is going to be in about 11 years? So today is kind of like a history-making day. So I'm going to write that down. April 1st, 2018. And I'm going to go, Pastor Dave, was there. You're a witness. You're all witness that Pastor Dave was there. So if I want to remember this day forever, I can take this piece of paper and I can go, I can prove it, I was there. Would someone believe me 10 years from now?
Yeah.
Would some of you be willing to witness this with me?
Yeah.
Would you like to, Gabriel, sign your name on there for me?
I forget.
You want to do that? Sign there. I got two more. Sign your name on that sheet. Anybody else? Isaac, want to do it? There we go. Just very quickly, sign your name on there. Say that we are witness that today is a history-making day. We were celebrating Easter on April Fool's Day, and it's not a fool. We're not joking. That's good. We got, excellent. I got three witnesses. That's perfect. We got one more witness. Come on up. Oh, Olive, what if I had everybody? Wait. Stop a second. This is going to take way too long. I have a better idea. So put your pens down. Just have a seat. Have a seat for a second. I have a much better idea as to how I was going to draw it, but I didn't think that it would. I'm a really terrible artist. So what if I did a picture? You know, if I just... that would probably help. I'm wondering why my flash isn't charging up. I can hear it. Did it flash?
No.
What? How am I going to record this event? Oh, there we go. Oh, but wait, so I have something signed to say that I was here. I have pictures, but I'm not in the picture. So we got to do what I call an old school selfie. Give me a second. I need to set this up because I want to be very careful. I want to record this day because I think it's very important that we record that on this day. I need you in the picture, though. So I'm going to set this up. Okay. Let's see if it's going to work. So I don't know if you've used one of these really old school things, but I'm going to press this button. This little red light's going to go on. I'm going to jump into the picture, and we're all going to do, I don't care what you do, just be appropriate. We're going to celebrate this day. You guys ready? Oh, I have to wind. See? There we go. Okay, I'm going to get in here. Smile, come on. Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait. Oh, my goodness. Oh.
I wasn't looking.
I wasn't looking. I wasn't ready. Oh, I know what you guys are thinking, right? You remember those days when you did this? So we got something called modern technology, don't we? So we know that the way these things really work in our world today is the way that we prove we were there is with this thing we call a selfie stick. So let me see if I've got this thing actually working. And if I go, come on, everybody, wave, we're at church today. Come on. Oh, did you get it? More of you? Okay, let's wave again. Here we go. Ha, we did it. We were in church this morning. You know what? So... Why do I mention this, all of this to you about pictures and keeping record of what went on today? Well, on one hand, in 11 years, you're going to be that much older. We're going to have Easter on April Fool's Day. You're going to go, I remember. I was there. No big deal. Done that. Been there. I've been there. I can tell you all about it. You see, the Gospel of Luke says this: many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those from the first, were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. You see, that line, Dr. Luke over here says, I want to write down, I want to record this event. Because he asked that question as well. Were you there? And Luke says, I was there. I want to record that down. I want you to be sure. Eyewitnesses and servants of the word. You know that phrase, eyewitness and servants, is very important. Because that phrase says there are specific people who were there, who saw it. And like I just did this morning, I wanted to really make sure I record this event. So everybody knows that this actually happened. Luke says, I did the same thing. I want to record that it would happen so that no one would forget. He goes on and says, with this in mind, since I myself carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you so that you would know that these things I'm talking about are actually true. So you would know they're true. You see, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, all these guys we read about in this document, they're saying it's true. We were there. So whether you were there in 1996, whether you are here today, or whether it was way back in the day when Jesus was crucified, all those days were actual, real days with real people. And if Dr. Luke, at that day, maybe he would have pulled out his selfie stick and said, hang on, Jesus. Come on, boys. Let's get around here. Let me prove that this actually took place. That's what eyewitness is about. You see, in our world, the reason people take selfies all the time is because you got to prove that I was there. I got to prove that this event happened. And in our world, apparently, there's something like 1.7 billion selfies taken almost every day of the year. Because people want to record that I was there. Today, we recorded. I got evidence that we were here. Luke records and says that everything we're celebrating today at Easter, he is an eyewitness. It was there. It actually happened. It took place. So today you're kind of part of history. Together we're part of a greater history. And the story that we're a part of is a story that's bigger than all of us together. But it's a true story. And I hope you believe that. Do you believe that? I hope so. You guys are awesome. You can head back to your seats.
You're fine. I am going to continue this next week because I think this is very, very important. You can throw those notes up there for me. That was the verses that reminded us of reports, the fact that there were witnesses, that people passed down what they'd seen and heard. Matthew 28:11-15 says, while the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city, reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. And when the chief priests met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money. You got to remember, this is right after the stone gets rolled away from the grave. There's nobody in the grave. The Roman guard had been posted. And of course, when the Roman guards wake up from the sleep they'd fallen into, they look behind them and they have failed in their mission and they are in serious trouble. And they were told, you are to say, his disciples came during the night, stole him away while you were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. So the soldiers took the money, did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very, very day. Fake news. Fake news. That was the answer. One of the things that's so important about eyewitnesses, as you've heard this morning, is reliability, trustworthiness. You have to believe what they're saying, and there has to be corroborating evidence. It's very, very important that we as Christians not be trapped by this ever-evolving idea that as time passes, we're simply believing a legend, that this is some sort of myth that we've made up. And as time goes by, it's more and more important to go back and check out the facts, to make sure that the documentation is accurate, to make sure that the eyewitness accounts were properly recorded, to go back through history and see as each time it's recorded, is there any deviation from the first time that it was recorded? Are people embellishing? Are they adding to the story? Are they making it sound like things happened that didn't happen? And that's part of biblical archaeology, is that constant desire to go back as far as we can and see what happened so that we can have confidence that we're not being misled, that we're not just stupid for believing something that somebody made up. There was a very particular problem that these soldiers had to deal with, and that was they had to come up with a story. You see, when it comes to historical evidence for the resurrection, the way that we determine truth nowadays is something called inference to the best explanation. Let me bore you really quickly with what that means. You begin with the evidence available to you, then you infer what would, if true, provide the best explanation of the evidence. That is still true today. That is legally how you try and figure out what is seen, what is heard, what is reported. In other words, we always ought to accept an event as historical if it gives the best explanation for the evidence surrounding it. And so even in that explanation, you see again the need for Christians to be authentic about the evidence that is there. It doesn't help anybody if we make up facts. It doesn't help anybody if you're caught in a lie. And so it's important that we know what was said and what there is. When we look at the evidence, the truth of the resurrection emerges very clearly as the best explanation. There's no other theory that even comes close to accounting for the evidence. Therefore, there is solid historical grounds for the truth that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. You see, the curious thing is, the tomb was empty. Nobody disputes that. The strange thing is, you would think that the easiest way is simply to say that was made up right from the beginning. He was there all the time. The problem was there is no body. Right from the beginning, even the people who hated Christians the most, even those people who had put Jesus on the cross and wanted him out of the way, are stuck admitting the tomb is empty. That's never come under question. It was empty. The question was what happened. We stuck an entire Roman guard on it. How in the world do all guards fall asleep at exactly the same time? Nobody hears anything while disciples tiptoe in and move this giant rock and then grab the body and run away with it just so they can have this wonderful myth that he rose from the dead. Which is why right afterwards, even the Jewish writings relay this account that we have in the Bible, which is that they had to come up with a story quickly. Quickly. The quicker you can put out a story, the sooner people can latch onto it, repeat it, and then people can believe it. So as soon as the Roman guards are going, we are so done, we are in so much trouble, and the elders and the leaders who had seen what had happened, they got to put a story together. So they bribe the guards. They say, here's what we want you to do. The tomb is clearly empty. We have no idea what happened to the body. So you guys say that the disciples came and took it away. And so it began with eyewitnesses who said, the tomb is empty. Nobody disagreed about the fact the tomb was empty. But what happens after that is amazing. Because if it just stayed there, it would become just myth and legend. But it is the eyewitnesses, it is the people who bumped into Jesus, it's the two guys on the road to Emmaus, it's the disciples in the upper room who are going, well, our cause is over. So much for those political aspirations, so much for all that social change, so much for that great leader. He dies, and here we are. And on top of it, they're probably coming for us next. And then Jesus walks in. And it changed everything. The best way to escape your own death as a disciple of Jesus Christ at that precise moment in time is simply to say, he died, the tomb is empty, we have no idea what happened, but please don't kill us. I don't know. Don't kill me. That's the best way to get away with your life. Instead, the disciples get charged up about the fact that Jesus is alive. They now go out and they start doing things in society that are even more going to get them killed. Who does that for the sake of a lie? What kind of person makes up a story and then when they have a chance to recant, step back from it and go, okay, right, I don't want to die for a stupid story that I made up. Instead, they turn the world upside down. They become the eyewitness saying, you wouldn't believe it. Death was not the end. Finally, one single human being, one God-man says to us that the greatest enemy of mankind can actually be defeated. That we don't have to just die and stay dead. That there's actually an eternity. There's actually a soul. That it actually makes a difference. And human beings can actually embrace the fact that it doesn't end with death. We're going out and we're telling people, I don't care if you kill me, because that has got to be told. I don't care if you take my life. I don't care if you kill my family. I don't care if you take my job. I don't care if you beat me. I don't care because I know the truth. I saw him and I got to tell you because this changes everything. Changes everything. And they were willing to die. In fact, they all did. Eventually, all of them were crucified, or killed or stoned, drowned, burned. Because they wouldn't shut up. They wouldn't say, I made it up. They died for what they knew. They died for the truth that they saw. There are a ton of things that I'm going to tell you next week about how we put chain of historical evidence together so that you and I have the certainty that those eyewitnesses told the truth. As Dave said, I wasn't there. What I have experienced is Jesus Christ and the power of his resurrection in my life. I know what it means to be forgiven of sin. I know what it means to be loved by God. I know what it means to have purpose in my life. That I have experienced, that I'm an eye, ear, nose, feely witness to. But all of that is based on my trust that the accounts are accurate, that as I go back through history and as I read it and as I unravel it, that those were intelligent, honest people who knew what they saw, knew what they experienced, and they said, the world has got to know and you will not shut us up. We will tell other people about the risen Lord. That's the reality. That's our celebration on a Sunday like this. Link hands together and say, when we accepted Jesus Christ as our Savior, we accepted him as our risen Savior. Yes, he died for my sin. He didn't go on the cross because of anything he did wrong. He did it for me. And as a result, I'm forgiven, and his resurrection proves that I will be resurrected as well. He can do it. He promises he'll do it for me. And that, my friends, is worth telling. That's worth believing. That is absolutely worth living for and dying for. The resurrection, it happened. It was real. Bless you as you live that out. We'll talk about it some more next week. I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to have the band stop. We're going to stand together. So stand with me. I'm going to pray, and we're going to sing one final song as we exit here this morning.